welcome back to For the Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely, the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with us for the second hour. Folks, we've been talking about this Gucci controversy, how their new designer turban has gotten people to turn heads and make some noise and calling out cultural appropriation. The Sikh community is really looking for an apology from Gucci, saying that they appreciate the fact that one of Gucci's retailers, Nordstrom's, has recognized this issue, but that they are expecting to hear something from Gucci. Gucci has yet to make any statement about the controversial product. And so many are saying that this is, once again, another form of cultural appropriation that Gucci has made. Now, you remember, Gucci came out with the blackface products just a few months ago and was under fire for that. Now we're at this conversation. Is it that Gucci just doesn't, is not getting, are they like culturally tone deaf? Can they be culturally tone deaf? Or is this really a situation where they just feel like, you know what, this is art? Well, the art does come at a costly price, as they have charged $790, nearly $800 for their latest designer turban. Let's go back to hearing what you say. Folks have checked in on my Facebook page. Irene said, white America always takes from other cultures and get rich off of it. Fact. Tact, taste, and sensitivity is the least of their concerns. If it sells, they will make it. Katasha said, what about all of the African prints and dashikis that people wear and are wearing? Some of these prints are from specific tribes and areas in Africa. I would never wear them because I don't know where I'm from and don't want to offend. Yeah. Oh, man, Katasha, I wish a lot of folks did take that same type of view. I see them. I don't even think some of these designs and prints are from tribes. I think they're just colorful designs. They just, I often wonder about that myself. And then Irene finishes and says, fashion is a statement and considered a form of flattery. If you don't like it or if you're not sure about it, it's offense. Don't buy or wear it. That's very true. Let's go back to the lines, hear what you got to say. Let's go to Angel. Angel, what's your take on this?
Hey, Faraji, how are you?
I'm good, Angel. How are you?
I'm good. So I'm on the fence about this topic. I don't believe that they should be fined, but I do believe that Gucci, one, needs to hire a new person in charge of their socially conscious marketing.
Angel, they may not even have a socially conscious department.
They need to develop one. Most companies now, I know, you know, Gucci is old, so they're probably doing things the old school way.
Yeah.
As a lot of older people, it's a hard habit to break.
Yeah.
But a lot of the newer companies are, their marketability is their social consciousness.
Yeah.
And caring about the environment and where they're getting their products from and stuff when they're going overseas. So they definitely need to create that. If they don't have one, or whoever's in charge of it needs to get fired, they need somebody else. That's number one. I do feel, while I don't feel they should be fined, I do feel they've missed a big teachable moment that they could provide to help solidify them as a powerhouse company. So if indeed, and I do believe in the marketing world that they've done some research.
Yeah.
They could provide that education on the cultures of which this art is essentially where they got that interpretation from.
Right.
And like others have said, it's not just the Sikh community that wears the turban. It's not just them. And origins can be difficult. You know, origins are sketchy at best.
Right.
Somebody can say, I created this, or this culture created this. But unless you were there.
Right.
You know, we really don't know.
Well, but you know, I mean, but for a design like this, you know, I think it's very clear where it came from. You know, when you see the turban, I mean, it's like when I first saw the turban, I was like, that's from the Sikh community. I don't know personally. I have
that the Sikh community didn't.
I mean, you're right. It could have been. It could have came from Africa.
Right.
It could have came from Africa.
It could have been their interpretation of the African head wrap.
Right. It could. Exactly. It could have been. But I guess the question becomes, and part of me starts to think, like, okay, if we are in this place that we start to commodify and capitalize off of these things, right, is there a line? Is there a boundary?
So there are boundaries. I do believe there are boundaries.
I mean, is anything sacred, Angel?
Well, that is the problem. We in America, like others have said, and as much as I really don't.
So nothing should be sacred. You're about to break it to me. Break it to me real easy and slow, Angel.
I'm about to make it real easy and slow. America is a capitalistic country.
Okay, let's stop right here. Here's you know what my response was? Wait a minute, hold on. Hold on. Now, hold on, though. And I hear you loud and clear. Here's my thing. When we say America, isn't that us? Isn't that people?
That is us by default. Now, granted, we were brought here. We were not, this is not a choice, but we are
a lot of people brought
here. But it was also marketed, America was also marketed as a melting pot. And just as you can't tell someone else who they can love, you can't tell someone else that they can't wear that because you're offended because it's subjective.
Okay, so where are the boundaries?
I feel like you can't because you can't sit here and say, I'm offended because you have that on, and you don't know that that person in their heart feels like they're paying homage to that community.
That's what I'm saying. Here's the thing. Here's the thing. It's not that I'm offended. Okay, Gucci can make any product that they want, right? It's like, do you get the full blessing from the community that that product is associated with? Is the narrative behind your marketing, how come we didn't see this type of product back in 2012 when a white supremacist opened fire in a Wisconsin Sikh temple where they killed 6 people and wounded 5? How come there wasn't that effort to say, you know what, in honor of those victims, Gucci is going to produce... You know what I mean? If they would have came out with that particular at that time and put a different narrative behind it, it probably wouldn't have gotten as much controversy. Matter of fact, people probably would have applauded the fashion house for that level of sensitivity. However, when stuff is coming out, it just seems like it's just scattershot. It seems very, money grabbing. It just seems very culturally insensitive. That's what I'm saying. But there has to be a boundary. There has to be a boundary somewhere.
I hear what you're saying, and there is a boundary. I don't feel like this is a boundary.
Okay.
It is a boundary issue.
Yeah.
I feel like other things that are more offensive, such as blackface, monkeys, things like that, are a little bit more offensive.
Yeah.
For me, in my interpretation.
Sure. And somebody might even, and I'm going to have to let you go, Angel, but somebody might be listening to that and say, well, you know what? Blackface is a part of our history, and people should embrace it because it was a symbol of the worst part of us, but now we can kind of confront that hatred. I don't know. I mean, you could twist your mind up to think of a lot of different ways to allow certain things to be permissible. Let's go to the phone lines. Gerard, thank you for your patience. What's your take?
Thank you for having me on, Faraji.
You're welcome.
Hey, man, I'm a black man in America, and you know what that means?
What does that mean?
That I'm enraged all the time. You know, it's too many people being super sensitive about everything.
Okay.
If the sheiks wear those, so what? I wear it, too. What that mean? I ain't no sheik. Just because Gucci make it don't mean we got to buy it.
I hear that.
You know what I'm saying? They can make whatever they want. They can make Gucci toilet paper. Do you want to buy it for $795? No. Well, don't buy the chic thing. Don't buy the head cover. It don't make it to where everybody want to be so sensitive about everything, man.
I hear
that. It's supposed to be America. You're supposed to be able to say what you want, feel how you want. But that is no longer because it's so sensitive in America. That don't make sense. That's crazy. This supposed to be America, the home of the free and all of that. But you can't say what you want. But I'm supposed to accept what you want me to accept. I don't care who made it. I don't care what they wear.
Mm-hmm.
It don't matter to me. There's too much going on to be keep worrying about what the fashion house doing. The fashion house is exactly that, a fashion house. We can't learn nothing from them.
I hear you loud and clear, Jawan.
They're trying to sell clothes, man. They're not trying to make sure you feel good about yourself today. Everybody needs to stop being so sensitive, man. It's going bad right now.
All right.
Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome, Gerard. Thank you. Let's go to Leo. Leo Bolton Hill. Leo, what's your take?
Yeah, I don't know whether I'm on the right broadcast. I'm very sensitive. Look, let me ask you something. I heard you say something about that were we able to admit that we have failed in providing solutions to violent street crime. Are you allowing us to speak about that at this time?
We still got some callers that want to talk about Gucci.
Okay. Well, can I speak on the violence?
Go ahead, Leo. You're on the line.
Okay. Well, yeah, because I came in late on the broadcast. My sense is that we have to hold folks accountable. We have to hold ourselves accountable.
Uh-huh.
We have to be able and willing to patrol our own neighborhoods. I didn't say with guns, but we've got to be vigilant about where we live and willing to protect and defend ourselves until death if it comes to that. I'm looking at, as you heard me say before, Sheriff John Anderson's been sheriff 35 years, or he's been in that office for many, many days. And we simply dismiss the fact that his deputies in the past have been on foot patrol, and they're not doing it now, and we don't seem to demand that they augment or supplement the actions of the Baltimore City Police Department, and they claim they're short-staffed, but they're raping us in terms of overtime, systemic overtime by design, I believe, in some instances. So how tough are we on politicians and others? We got to be tough on each other. We cannot find solutions to violent street crime or drugs or anything else if we don't set a standard of excellence and a standard in keeping with the seven principles of Kwanzaa and the first fruits of the African harvest. If we have no standard, even the Ten Commandments or the Holy Quran, whatever we say we believe in, we've got to stand by that. And if we can't stand definitively with what we believe in because we're too chicken-hearted and too cowardly and we want to jump on the bandwagon because it's fashionable to do so, then we're going to die and we're going to be destroyed. We're going to hell. So we got to get out of that, and we got to stand for something sometime. And I just see so many people, Brother Faraji Muhammad, vacillating. I mean, they're like a piece of candy or a mush. They just fall apart. They say, we're for this, and they protest, and then the next thing you know, the next day they've changed their mind.
Yeah.
They've chickened out, and chicken-heartedness won't get us anywhere. We got to stand for something. By this rock I stand.
There it is. Hey, Leo, appreciate you. We're going to hold those thoughts in as we kind of work our way to that conversation. Let's go back to the phone lines, 410-319-8888. Ayana, what's your take on this Gucci situation?
Oh, hi.
So
I just wanted to offer, I guess, a different perspective.
Uh-huh.
I was reading an article earlier today about the Gucci controversy with the turbans. And the article basically posed a question like, is this Gucci's ploy, I guess, to try to be culturally inclusive by presenting these turbans for, I guess, from like the last little scandal that they had.
With the blackface.
But I think that the reason that people are upset with the way that they've marketed it is because a culturally inclusive brand, first and foremost, but also the models that they use are not culturally inclusive. Like, they are using white models to, I guess, present these turbans, and it's seen as insensitive and offensive to the communities that actually wear these fashions. And had they been a little more inclusive, like how luxury hijabs, like, you know, now they are present, different companies have luxury hijabs, but the people who are modeling those hijabs are Islamic women, not, you know, white women or whatever, people who are not of that specific culture and faith. So I think that's just where they dropped the ball in terms of it. Like, I guess, I mean, ultimately, I didn't think it was like a bad idea to, for in terms of them to like create Gucci turbans, but because of the fact that they use white models to present these Gucci turbans, it's now seen as culturally offensive.
Now you know, we got to think about Nick Cannon. He wears a turban now.
Yes. He does.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on, Ayana. Did you just take a sigh of breath? You just like, yeah, Faraji, yeah.
I mean, he does. A lot of black people wear turbans as well. But, I mean, I'm just saying, like, Gucci is not historically known for being culturally inclusive. And so if they wanted to now change the narrative for themselves, then they should use models of color.
Right. Models of color. So if they had, for example, if they had models from the Sikh community, that would be a different thing.
Right.
I got
it,
you.
It would be, I feel like people would have accepted it a lot more.
I agree.
You know what I'm saying?
I agree. But that comes down to PR more so than...
It's a fail with their marketing and their PR company, and I don't know how it is that they have managed to...
So you're comfortable, would you... Are you
the worst.
But Ayana, are you comfortable with a major fashion house like Gucci designing or capitalizing off of the style of a community that sees that particular item as being a deep religious product, for lack of a better word? They see that, you know, the men of faith wears that. For example, in Islam, you know, we have... the men sometimes will wear headgear to show what the imam might wear the headgear, or the men of the faith may wear the headgear. Now, if Gucci starts making that type of headgear, which I truly doubt, because they're going to be like, oh my gosh, they're going to think, you know, quote unquote terrorist or some garbage. But if you have a fashion house that is wearing kufis or making kufis, or they wear the, you know, would you be comfortable with that?
I mean, I can't really say because I can't afford. I don't know. I can't say that I would or wouldn't accept it because I can't afford Gucci, so I can't.
Right.
Just to say, like, with people who are, you know, Indian or Islamic who have the money to buy those things, still buy Gucci.
Right.
They still buy Louis Vuitton. They are some of the biggest people. They're some of the biggest people who support those types of fashion houses. So I can't really say. I mean, I don't personally support the marketing tactics and some of the things that Gucci has been coming out with lately.
Gotcha.
Some of it has been culturally offensive. But I was just reading an article earlier, and I was like, it is possible. I mean, I guess we won't know until they come out with an actual statement about why it is that they chose to do.
I don't know. I think forever going to be a mighty long time for us to wait for that, Ayana. I appreciate
right,
you.
Right, right. Again, I mean, we have this conversation about, a fashion house and that a lot of people can't even really afford. So.
Well, you know what? Here's the conversation, though. It's not really just about Gucci. The conversation is about understanding the importance and value of culture.
So
that's what I'm saying, because I think that we also are getting to a space in this country where, because we're like, oh, I'm American, but what does that culturally mean? Where does that mean? I mean, you have all of these different groups of people, and like I mentioned to my last caller, you got all of these different groups of people, but why is it offensive for folks that have come to these shores, including black folks that either were taken here or came here voluntarily, for us to try to at least keep intact our cultural history in some sense of the word? Because if you respect your own culture, if you show that you honor your own culture, you can honor the culture of someone else. So I think that's the big thing. And I think that's something that's get lost in the conversation, is like, oh, this is bigger than just about fashion. This is essentially about culture and how we can get to a place that, yes, you could still be American if you're black in America and you're from Africa and you're in this country. doesn't mean that you lose anything because you remember your African heritage or you lose your heritage in this country. You don't lose anything. Actually, that makes them, that right there, knowing your history, knowing where you came from, is supposedly what makes this country great. So that's the big thing. Gene, let's talk about it. What's your take?
Hello?
Yeah, Gene, go ahead. Gene? All right, Gene, we're going to have to let you go. Sounds like there was a bad connection. Lance, what's your take on it, sir? Thank you for checking in.
Hey, no problem, Faraji. Actually, I mean, I feel as though, I mean, Gucci has three flagship stores in Dubai alone, right? So in the sense of us making any kind of decision or any type of, like, having a conversation about how Gucci is appropriating anything, it's really not in our field or ball field of, like, being really able to discuss it in the same sense that we wouldn't want someone discussing, you know, how things affect us as black people and things like that. Yes, we can have freedom fighters or people who stand beside us and do the same thing, but yeah, we can't really lead the charge on something that we, again, don't really know fully about as far as like the Sheikh religion, et cetera. I mean, for all intents and purposes, like I have dreadlocks, right?
Yeah.
I wear a hair cover and people sometimes think that I am a Sheikh. I'm not. And I make a point not necessarily to say that I'm not, but if someone says that I am, I'm like, no, that's not necessarily my religion, but you know. I respect what they
do. Wait a minute. They said you with locks and they think you are part of the Sikh community?
Correct, because I cover my hair completely when I'm at work.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
So, you know, that happens a lot. But in the sense of, I think, you know, if we talk about, I think a good comparison would be Rihanna coming out with her line where she came out with a makeup, like a foundation called Geisha Chic. Right?
Geisha Chic, okay.
Geisha Chic, yeah. She got a lot of pushback on it because by the Asian community because they felt as though she was appropriating or, for that matter, saying something racist. I needed it tomorrow morning.
So what does Geisha, did she ever say what that meant? What does Geisha mean?
Geisha is a type of, how do I say, a Geisha is a type of woman who is like a courtesan or a courting woman who is used in some type, like similar to prostitution, but not.
Oh, wow. Right?
But she was saying in a sense of like a geisha wears kabuki mask.
Ah, like gotcha, gotcha.
It's a certain color.
Right, right, to accentuate right. The beauty of a woman.
Exactly.
Gotcha,
so that's
gotcha.
Exactly where she meant it to be. She explained it as such, but she removed it from her line because it was offensive to her client base.
Right.
And that's something that is you can expect of Rihanna because she's the type of person who is very conscientious of the people around her.
Right. You know? Absolutely.
So in the sense of Gucci, you can't really expect a global clearing house, basically, that does fashion to really even care about what we're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, like at the end of the day, it's about like, you know, who's going to spend the money, as one caller said earlier. Like, we don't spend all that money on that, so why would they even care? That's like Gucci came out with the, the blackface turtleneck or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, they had the whole blackface product line.
Right. Who's going to wear that, though? Yeah, like, that's my question. Who's going to wear that?
It's sold.
And it's being sold, right?
It is being sold.
You're going to be walking down the street wearing that.
Hey,
you know
look.
What I mean? Like,
you bring up a good point. Hey, Lance, you bring up a good point. I appreciate you, man. You know, in regards to the blackface situation, when that happened a few months ago, the Gucci president and CEO, Mr. Marco Bazzari, he went to a Gucci-sponsored event in New York's Harlem in addition to a recent fashion show featuring a London-based black designer by the name of Oswald Boateng at the Apollo Theater to mark the 100th anniversary of the Harlem Renaissance. So they have been trying to do some things to show that they are sensitive to the cultural contributions of the, in that case, the black community. But I don't know. I don't know if Gucci is trying and they just keep missing the mark or what. I don't know. Look, I got to take my final break when we come back, more of your responses. But also, I want to get your thoughts on this violence issue. I want to hear what you have to say. You know, is it that we come into this dealing with this issue thinking we have all the answers when in fact we don't? Or where do we start to really address the situation beyond politics, beyond policing? Or is it just starting in there? Stay riding with us. A whole lot is coming up in the final 30 of For the Culture here on WEAA.
Yeah.
I do this for my culture. I do this for my culture.
Welcome back to For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with us. We got a few final remarks from our wonderful listeners about this whole Gucci controversy. Let's go back to the phone lines to hear what you have to say. Gene, thank you so much for checking in, Gene. We lost you before, but
yeah, I apologize, but I have a phone call coming in, and it just cut off the whole thing.
Worst times.
Yeah, well, technology, baby.
Go ahead, G.
Okay, so capri pants. You know what capri pants are, right?
Yes, those are the pants that don't go all the way down to your heels.
Yeah, right. So, my wife wears capri pants. She just loves them, right? And I hate them because in most of the enslaved Africans, they had capri pants on, right? And it just was a turnoff for me. So, but then,
you know what, Gene? You were thinking that. I never thought.
I swear
about
to God,
that.
Man, I think I am the only person.
I never. Now you gonna make me look at capris and be like, no, don't you wear that, baby?
They're slave pants.
They are them slave pants. Don't wear those capri pants.
So, I went to the Smithsonian one time, and I was doing some personal research.
Yeah.
And this a man by the name of Fountain Hughes. He was on the WPA recording of a person, who was recorded like in the 40s, early 40s, who was born in slavery. And he explained that maybe they got clothes once a year, and boys up to maybe the age of 14 only had a big shirt. And they didn't get, he said he didn't get any pants until he was like 14 or 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And you can imagine that you wore those pants until you were growing and you outgrew your pants, and they look like capris,
right?
And so that substantiated why people were wearing those pants. It's not like you are enslaved.
No.
And you go into Gucci and shopping or whatever.
No, that is that is
so it's Meeks Variety and nobody else, man.
Hey, Gene, I appreciate you. Thank you so much. Man, Gene gonna mess me up about capri pants. Mark, what's your take?
Brother Faraji, how you doing, brother?
I'm good. How are you, brother?
Salaam alaikum, my friend.
Walaikum salam.
Listen, Brother Faraji, I'm going to go back to earlier in the conversation and your question. You had the same struggle that I used to have. I used to always say, are these people this stupid to keep making these same mistakes over and over again? And then it dawned on me. No, Faraji, they are not that stupid, because I used to say it has to be a voice of reason in these corporate boardrooms.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, wait a minute. There are voices of reasons in those boardrooms. And what those voices of reason say, this is a capitalistic America.
It is.
The penalties will far be less than the money we're going to make when we first jump off.
Mm.
That's what I believe, Faraj. I think when they sit down and they say, if we get called out and when we get called out, we'll make the appropriate apologies. And by that time, we will have made our mark in terms of the money we have wanted to make. So, when I thought about it, and I said, they just kind of weigh it. They say, well, at the end of the day, we may have to make an apology, maybe make a donation, particularly, the black community, make a donation to the NAACP, and all will be forgiven.
But here's my thing. It just seems so isolated, though, Mark. It seems like it's just out of nowhere. Like I said earlier, if it would happen right after the shooting at the Wisconsin Sikh temple back in 2012, if this was, then it would be like, oh, okay, I could, in an effort to say we are all part of that community.
And Faraji, I totally get what you're saying, and you're absolutely right. However, I want to just take it off the Sikh community.
Okay.
And my whole thing is just about the whole capitalistic part of it.
Okay.
They're not thinking about exactly who and the timing of it. It's just about the money. And they know that for the most part, particularly us, we're accepting an apology. Because how many people still going to Denny's? How many black folks still going to Denny's? I ain't been in 10 years since they offended me. But I bet you folks still going to Denny's. And let me just throw this out there, and I'm hanging up.
Go ahead.
As long as you got, I don't like to call names, but as long as you got coons like Floyd Mayweather Jr., who after they offend us go in Gucci and spend $20,000,
yeah,
they could care less.
Well, that's where that, and see, you know, you're talking about the struggle that you have along with me. My struggle is, are there any boundaries? And I'm saying, looking at the Capitol, is there anything sacred anymore in terms of bias being a part of a capitalistic society?
Absolutely.
Are we at this point now? And I'm saying black folks as well, but as all of us, black, white, Asian, Latino, Native American, this melting pot of a society that we're in, are we at this point where there's nothing sacred? Like if we could sell artifacts of religion, if we can sell artifacts of sacred tradition, I mean, so is there nothing sacred? And what's wrong? My question is that wrong? Okay, we keep saying American is capitalistic. And that's absolutely true. But what about the people? The people are the soul of any particular country. It's the soul. So what about us? Okay, the systems that are in front of us that we are all participants in are capitalistic. But does that mean that we as the people have to be capitalistic? Can't we as the people say, you know what? All right, enough of this capitalism on this area. Let's think about the humanity of in this particular regard. Versus we are all capitalist. Because, see, I live in a capitalistic society, but I'm not a capitalist.
Exactly.
You see what I'm saying? So we can use Jesus' word, you know, I'm in this world, but I'm not of it. So are we saying that at the end of the day that it's okay to be the systems that we oftentimes criticize, that we oftentimes belittle, that we oftentimes hate? Now we want to embrace it and say that is who we are? Isn't that counterintuitive? Isn't that?
Absolutely. 100% agree, brother.
I'm trying to understand, Mark. I'm just trying to understand.
Yes, sir. Peace, brother.
Hey, peace, brother. Thank you so much.
Yes,
Donna,
sir.
What's your take on this?
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the crime and have we lost or...
All right, I'm going to switch gears. Let's go, Donna. Let's go. That's how I'm feeling. I'm feeling it right now. Let's go. All right, we're going to switch it to crime because it's a crime that what we're seeing, but it's the reality of what we see. We saw that over this past weekend, folks. There were 10 shootings. There were a couple of fatalities within the shootings, and certainly our hearts and prayers go out to the families that were affected by these shootings over the weekend. I'm at this point, Donna, I'm asking the big question. Is it time to admit that we have no solutions so that way we can come to the table to critically think of new solutions? Because I think that part of it is the psychology, and I might be wrong, and you are a thinking woman, so I know you can correct me if I'm wrong on this. If we believe that if the police and City Hall have the solution and we should just follow their law, what about if we don't believe that they have solutions? What about if they say, you know what, we tried all that we can, let us try something different and do something different?
Well, when you look at the mayor, when you look at the mayor and city council and the police department, they always do the same thing over and over again. They never hit the target of what's causing the crime. You know, it's a lot of it's mental illness, a lot of it's, you know, behavior issues, a lot of it, you know, stems from family dysfunction, which in the communities that this crime activity is happening is in the most dysfunctional, most poorest communities. Because you can go into a middle class, upper middle class, maybe I would say upper middle class or African American community, and you may find maybe one family out of maybe 100. But the less money that community has, the more you're going to find, you know, crime. So the less, you know, if there's more poverty, you're going to find more crime. And so the solution, there is a solution, and they know. Because we have a lot of behavior experts, we have a lot of mental health experts. We have people in all fields that can tell you exactly what's causing it. The question is, do they want to correct it? or is the crime being used to keep people working? Because I feel that with all the experts and PhDs and people all the background, we should have been able to resolve it. So my solution is, and Dr. Francis Weldon has always said, we can change a community in one generation by starting with the mothers. Because most of the crime that's taking place are happening in families where there's no fathers in the home, mom is struggling to raise one to more children, and she's in poverty, and then the children in poverty. So if you can change the dynamic and the structure of her family, you know, get to her before she, you know, goes further and deeper into poverty, and then which breeds depression and other issues, we can kind of reduce the amount of poverty that exists and the crime that's happening. These young people who are committing crime, they're doing it they're acting out because no one's listening to them. No one's reaching out to them. No one's saying to them, no one's hearing their cry. And, you know, when you got kids who can't even wash their clothes, you know, they're coming to school smelling, they don't even have underclothes, they don't have socks, they don't have basic things that they normally would have if they had a family with money, or the kids have to go outside and sell drugs or be squeegees. That's a concern. And it's right in our face, but we're not talking about it. We just keep touching on it a little bit, or we'll say, well, we need more police activity. What in the world is the police going to do if what in the world is the police going to do if we cannot find out? The police cannot get in the homes, in the minds of these community families. So if a crime is committed, there's no way that the police are going to know when it's going to happen until after it happens.
Yeah.
So I say we need to start again back in the home with single mothers who are in poverty and start at that level. Because like Dr. Francis Weldon said, you know, you have to get to, if you can stop the first generation of that poverty, which is where it's coming from, we can resolve a lot of the issues that are afflicting our community, especially our poor community. And that's all I have to say, and thanks so much.
You're welcome, Donna. Thank you so much. I like that start. Excuse me. I like that start. The fact we start with the moms, especially in these low-income families. I think that we've had a conversation before that, you know, at some point we got to admit that we don't have all of the skills to be parents nowadays need to be sharpened. And I'm serious. I think parenting classes should be offered in our community. I know people might believe a lot of our young, especially young parents, older parents, we believe that we good people, we good parents. But that stuff comes with skill. You know, you talking about raising another human being to be a contributing member of society. And if there are some things, some deficiencies, some shortcomings and flaws that you have within your own self, then how can you instill that within your child? And so it takes that time. I think parenting needs to be a focal point on this. Parenting. You know, I used to work in a neighborhood, and in the neighborhood, there were issues where young people have been, you know, doing all types of crazy stuff, from throwing bricks to people's houses to literally running on parked cars. Who says that's good? Who has given children, or who has allowed that to happen? And we can all call up here, and I know many of you have shared with me your stories about, you know, growing up having certain level of boundaries and guidelines on how to grow up and what happened in your neighborhood. And some of you are at your wit's end and trying to figure out, well, what to do with the next generation. But guess what? Those are our children. And all of these fatalities and these shootings that we had, these are part of our family. My big thing is, okay, let's come to the table and I say, you know what? Everything that we thought that was going to happen or going to work hasn't worked. So let's just start from new. Let's start from scratch. Let's figure something out. You can have as many patrols as you want to, right? You can have as many police on the corner as you want to. But there's inherently something wrong. Inherently, intrinsically, fundamentally. Somebody believes that their behavior, you know, we have the ceasefire effort, which is a beautiful effort to try to get people to think differently about violence, and they should. But unfortunately, we still have a large contingent of trigger pullers who don't even care about stopping the violence. They don't care. And even more unfortunately is that the people that these trigger pullers are family and friends of don't say nothing. So we keep having these circular conversations about stopping the violence, stopping the violence, stopping the violence. But nobody talks to the police because you got your own hangups about the police, understandably. But nobody talks to the police. We're not talking to the police. We're not getting Ray Ray locked up. That's our cousin. That's my man. We're not going to talk to them. So all of that is like, okay, unless we say enough is enough, then guess what's going to happen? Stuff is going to keep on being the same way. Let's go back to the phone line. Let's go from Tyrone, Catonsville. Tyrone, what's your take?
Yeah, my take says you're correct. The reason why nothing's happening is because they're trying the same things over and over, and they don't work, but they continue to do it. And you cannot, I repeat, you cannot police yourself out of this problem.
No.
And then people fail to understand that. So, and just looking at the murder victims now, they've analyzed the murder victims because if you're murdered, you're not going anywhere. But 84% of the murder victims have criminal records, okay, from last year. It was 309 murders.
Where you get that number from? Because I want to certainly check on that.
You can Google it on the internet.
Okay.
Right in Baltimore City.
Gotcha.
If you analyze it, the problem is people don't analyze the data. They see a bunch of numbers. And that can be dangerous. You'll have people going to call the National Guard, all kinds of nonsense.
Right.
When they don't analyze the data and find out what's going on. Now, and then you can justify a lot of things to our detriment based on just raw numbers, like gentrification and things like that, that actually hurt us, which don't solve that problem particularly because they've been tearing down houses since, you know, whole blocks and the murder rate's gone up. And you'll hire police chiefs and pay them $250,000. And that doesn't work. And that's because you're not dealing with the core issue of the problem. Now, okay, getting back to the stats, if you analyze it, they say that 84% of these people have murder victims, not the perpetrators, because some of them haven't been caught. But the murder victims, you're going to see them land there. 84% of them have criminal records out of 309. And the average murder victim from last year had 10 charges on their record. Only 34 of them were above the age of 50. Okay, and 219, the vast majority had drug convictions on that criminal record.
Mm.
Okay, so that tells you something right there. Right there, if you analyze that data, it tells you what the population of people that are actually, I'm not saying all the murder victims have criminal records, not all of them.
No, I hear you. Yeah, I hear you, but you got to be scientific in that.
Right, you got to be scientific. Now, you have your innocent bystanders that make the news, like the random old
right.
guy that gets shot.
Right, oh yeah, 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 yeah,
but
you're right.
The vast majority of these murders are headshots, okay? That tells me of execution.
Hey, Tyrone, I got to let you go, but you're right. I think that looking at those numbers much more closely, more scientifically, will give us the answers that we need and provide us the direction which way to go. Robert, Northwest Baltimore, then Coach Gary, Linda, and then Kenneth. Robert, what's your take?
Hey, man, I think this is what it is. It turned out to be a self-purge. As we were looking for outsiders to come in and do to us, we turned around and been systematically doing to ourselves. But the vehicle of this systematic purging is something that we can prohibit. And if drugs is the core of it, I think it was enough education around drugs that drugs should not be the core of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's too many examples of what drugs do and did not do. The people for that to be the sole core of what our problem is.
Yeah.
And always go back to the psychological and the pathological mindset that was rendered under us through the hip hop videos and even the way we go to church. And everybody figured that you gotta die first in order to have a heaven here on this earth.
Come on, Robert, why are you going to open up that big conversation?
It has to do with a whole lot of psychological,
right.
Psychological makeup, man. And thank God for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, because that's one of the study lessons you can get. His method is a good way that we can be debriefed.
Yeah.
And,
You're right.
A lot of these young guys can be debriefed from all this corruption and everything. And we got to use what we have. Everything outside of the black community cannot help us. And that's what we have to get in our minds and hearts.
Hey, Robert, you're saying it, and I got to let you go. Checking in from Northwest Baltimore. Always good to hear from you. Coach Gary, what's your take on this from Baltimore?
What's going on, Faraji?
I'm good, Coach.
You and everybody who's listening. I'm going to say this right here.
Yeah.
And I'm a father of 7 children.
I'm
a coach in my neighborhood. I lost one of my children, and my youngest boy is in the hospital right now. Mm. If you want to find out how we can solve this problem that everybody's talking about every day from the 60s on, is to bring your radio show in each and every neighborhood and speak it out loud. And then you could talk to the people that's really out here. Because I'm telling you, homeboy, listen, and I really respect you and everybody who's here, Dr. K, even though I don't agree with everybody. But until you get out here and hear from the people who are not listening to you, that's when you find the solution. And I'm out here every day, popcorn. I'm out every day at homeboy, every single day. I mean, I stand in front of guns. I hold people when they cry. I laugh at them when they funny.
Hey, Coach. Hey, Coach. Because of time, I want to take you up on his offer. I'm going to put you on hold. I'm going to have you talk to my producer, Alex, and then that way we can get your math, and then we can start making some connections. Because, I feel like that's, if you can help us in this effort, Coach, I want you to help us in this effort. You calling us out?
Man, I've been helping in this effort.
No, I'm talking. Listen.
I'm right here for you.
All right, that's what I'm saying. I want you to help us to set something up. I mean, it's warm out, so we just need a space. And we need to have these conversations. So I want to enlist and enroll you to help me in that process. Kenneth, then Miss Linda. Kenneth, checking in from Baltimore.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, this cheap phone I got. I just want to make sure you can hear me. Hey, listen, for Raji.
Yep.
Raji.
Yep.
That's frontline stuff you're talking, brother. That's on the front line, especially that sister that was talking.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying black families don't have basic things, you know, in this city. It's like a rural city that we're living in at times in certain parts of the city. And the brother that was just talking, he's on the front lines. You know, he's seeing it every day. And that's the kind of stuff I like to hear you talk about. You know, I don't mean no harm, and I'm not trying to tell you your job. But until we get to the front lines, to the meat of our problems in the community, it ain't no use nobody talking at all. You know what I'm saying?
No, I hear you. But you know what? Our culture and it signifies a lot of people and a lot of things. And then here's the other thing, Kenneth, really quickly. Everybody is not going to be a frontline soldier like Coach Gary. Everybody is not going to be on the front line. We saw that with the Freddie Gray situation. Everybody's not a frontline warrior.
Like you said, if they're not on the front line, they should be on the front line, because sooner or later, we're all going to share the same stuff, man.
We are. But you know what? They could be on the front line in their own way. Like, everybody can't be Coach Gary. Everybody's not going to be able to cultivate and mold young people like a coach will, huh?
We don't have politicians that's going to help us. Nobody's going to knock on that door where you live at and say, I'm here to give you umpteen this and umpteen money and umpteen that to make your life better. The community, man, you know, we can talk. But until I'll stand out in front of City Hall, but how many of the armchair revolutionaries, your armchair philosophers, your armchair politicians are going to get off that phone and come and help me?
Because here's the thing, as always, I appreciate you, Kenneth. Thank you. The reality is this, folks, that at the end of the day, we all got to play a part in it. But more importantly, we have to make sure that we each bring our skills and our talents to the table. Miss Linda, you got the final word. What's your take?
Okay, I just want to say God the head man is calling for the head to rise up. All men, rise up. Remember that God created you to be kings and priests, to make an impact in this world, to make a difference. You are the head of your household. You're supposed to be the head of your family. Sit down, bring God back into your homes, into your hearts. Forget about materialistic things, because when you put your trust in Almighty God, the creator of all creations, he will supply your needs. You ain't got to rob, kill. You ain't got to do none of that. Come back to God. He said, return unto me. God bless. I love you. You're running out of time. But I tell you, God is, he's still the answer.
You're absolutely right, Sister Linda. God thank you so much. God bless you too. And I love you as well. Miss Linda, thank you so much for checking in and giving us that spirit. Folks, that's going to do it for me. We're going to do our best. And I'm serious. I mean, Coach Gary said, look, we need to bring it out here. Let's go to the streets. Let's go to the streets. My hope and prayer is that we can at least change the conversation and get people to think much more critically about the preservation of life rather than the easiness of death. Get young black men to think differently, to have much more intimate conversations. And so we're dedicated and committed to making that happen. So God willing, we're going to bring those resources together to at least get a broadcast or a couple of broadcasts out there with you so we can understand what is it that we need to do to change this direction that our city is going in. We do not want this to be a situation where as soon as the sun rises, shots of fire. No, no. There is a future for this city. There is a future for the for black people in this city. There's a future for all of the citizens in this city. We just got to do our part to make sure that that future is preserved and certainly make sure that it's insured. All right? That's going to do it for me. I thank each and every one of you for joining me in the conversation, both online and on air. Make sure you continue the conversation. Check us out at WEAA.org to get all your latest news and, of course, all of the latest podcasts of For the Culture, as well as Today with Dr. K. And that can be found at WEAA.org. Thank you to my dynamic production team. It's Mallory Pinker-Pierre, Alex Blanc, and my man Dre Day for making me sound so good. Follow us on all social media platforms as well. As always, never be afraid to challenge what's wrong. Stand for what's right while being yourself in the process. I'm Faraji Muhammad. Look forward to having another great set of conversations with you tomorrow for another exciting edition of For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. And remember, Baltimore, do more, but be exceptionally good for the culture. Peace. We'll be right back.